Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about green and growing things today on KHOI Radio. Hi, my name is Lana Noctigal, and I'm here with
Ursula Rudenberg
to talk about gardens and starting your green and growing things this summer. My cohort, Donna Prusgintis, is out of town, but she did send a nice postcard of all places that Donna is this time of year. She's been spending some time with her daughter down in New Zealand, and I asked her to send me some thoughts on her current food encounters down there. And she sent this little postcard. The sun is warm and strong. The river is singingly clean with a chill thrill for full immersion. And the hot springs, ah, the ocean, ah, there, that's another option. Nature is lavish, even a thick soundtrack of cicadas and bird chorus. It's equinox today as I'm writing, and our backyard has an overloaded heirloom apple tree. I can't identify the variety, but it's a rare perfume that I've tasted somewhere before. We also have lemons and oranges for the picking. An office mate of my daughter Diana's is sending me figs in quantity, so I have made fig conserve by lightly cooking and smashing them until warm and juicy. Add the zest of one lemon, a spot of vanilla extract, only the smallest amount of local honey, and, oh, a pinch of sea salt and a grind of fresh black pepper. A real treat for Midwestern taste buds. I'll be home soon. Love, Donna.
And where is Donna?
She is in New Zealand, and I don't have a town, but she's visiting her daughter in New Zealand. Today we're going to be talking about starting your garden. Spring is coming, definitely. But first we have a dessert report. Recently, KHOI was part of a fundraiser, and one of the fundraiser events was a dessert auction. So can you update us on that?
Yes, on March 8th, we had Ames Trivia Night, and this is a night for trivia buffs. It was held at the Boys and Girls Club here in Ames, and this was a fundraiser that we did in partnership with NAMI, which is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and we had about 200 people came to the event.
It was
very exciting. We had a full house, and I think we raised around $3,000 for each organization, which is very helpful to both our organizations. And one of the features of the event was that a lot of businesses and also private people contributed very beautiful desserts, and they were auctioned off, which really helped raise money for both organizations. Now, I learned some interesting things. One is people love carrot cake.
Oh.
Carrot cakes sold really well. People want cheesecake. We didn't have any cheesecake there, but people asked for it. And Lana, you made a beautiful Linzer torte. So this was, we were hoping today to get a recipe from you today on how you made the Linzer torte.
Right. A word about Linzer torts. What I made for the auction was a chocolate Linzer torte. Normally, or for real Linzer torte purists, it would never have chocolate in it, just a really nice nut and butter crust. But this is a chocolate Linzer torte because one can never have too much chocolate. My version is a classic version of the classic Viennese dessert featuring a rich chocolate crust. The word Linzer refers to the city of Linz, Austria. The torte is a fruit-filled treat particularly suitable for an afternoon tea. It serves 12 to 16. Each little piece is really, really rich. I'm going to read the recipe here, and mainly I'm just going to read the ingredients so you can get an idea in your mind of what this tastes like. The recipe itself will be available on the KHOI website. Look under the Donalana Kitchen section, and if it's not there today, it'll be there soon. Look for the chocolate Linzer torte recipe. This recipe is the kind of thing that is really not all that hard to do, but you'll find that it will dirty a lot of pans and spoons in your kitchen, because there's a lot of little steps. There's grind this, mix that, melt that. So although it isn't hard to do, you'll end up with a dirty kitchen. Here's the ingredients. 1 3/4 cups ground walnuts, 1 1/4 cups flour, 2/3 cup sugar, 1 teaspoon ground cinnamon, 3 ounces bittersweet chocolate melted. This is the interesting part here. There's 2 egg yolks uncooked and 2 egg yolks hard boiled. You crumble them up in the dough. 3 tablespoons of butter, melt that with the chocolate. Zest of 1 lemon. That is the crust. It's basically a cookie crust. You make the crust. It's hard to handle. It ends up being kind of a crumbly crust. So it may not look pretty as you are assembling this little cookie crust thing, but it works out really well. It helps after it cooks in the oven. It all melts down. After you assemble a crust in the bottom of a pan, 9-inch pan, you put almost all of the currant jelly. The last ingredient is 1 1/2 cups of currant jelly. Save out about 1/4 cup of that. Put the currant jelly in the bottom of that pan, and then use some of the crust that you've saved back, or the dough that you saved back, to make a crust on top. And traditionally, it's made into a lattice, just crisscross and crisscross. You bake that for a while. You can look up the recipe, about 40 minutes. And then as you take this hot tort out of the oven, you use whatever is left of the jelly, and you drop jelly drops into the squares left by the lattice so that there's jelly sticking out of each of the little holes in the top of the crust. And as that's warm, it'll all melt together. Let it cool completely on a rack, and then unmold it if you'd use a springform pan. And enjoy chocolate Linzer tort. You can use gluten-free flours because this is a good recipe for that sort of thing. A currant jelly is the traditional filling for this dessert, but I have substituted with elderberry jelly or crabapple jelly or any other tart jelly that you like that can complement that rich taste of chocolate. Again, that recipe is on the Donalana Kitchen KHOI Radio website.
This is a very traditional type of dessert, and it also is a very dense dessert, so the pieces that you end up serving are relatively small because there's only so much that somebody can eat at a time, so it's a very satisfying.
Yes, mm-hmm. Very much like a candy bar. It seems to go well whenever I take it to a potluck, so it must be a good dessert. That's chocolate Linzer tort.
And it's very beautiful to look at.
Very good.
So to find the Donalana Kitchen page on khoifm.org. On the homepage, there's a tab that for programs, and one would look under there on the drop down and find Donalana Kitchen.
Good. Let's take our thoughts to gardening. Let's have a little bit of gardening music. A tune by Sam Rosetta called Maggie's Garden. Good thing to think about today. This is KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City Ames. Today we're going to be talking about green and growing things. It's spring. It's spring. Let's celebrate.
So, Lana, how did you get started doing a garden? Now, you do more than gardening now. You farm. You're known for that in the area.
The garden grew. The garden turned into a farm.
Okay, but, so tell us how you got started.
How I got started. My family always gardened. Grandfather, grandmother, mom and dad always had a garden. Not necessarily, my parents lived in a rather small lot in town, so we'd go out to my uncle's farm, and the family garden was out there. I don't recall any horrible garden stories, like people say, oh, my, I had to work so bad and hard in the garden that I'd never want to do again. I just remember it as a joyful time. I never really had to, the work of the garden. I think my mom and dad did most of that. I do remember helping to harvest, pick strawberries, shell peas, that sort of thing.
So you remember it as play, not chores.
Yes, I remember it as play, not chores. That didn't keep my family from being enamored by things like chicken pot pie and Jell-O and Wonder Bread. I mean, it's not like we were garden purists and had to eat everything from the garden, but we put, mom put up a lot, and a lot went in the freezer, a lot went on the canning shelves. I remember that. Didn't do any thinking about gardening for a while, but then in college, I remember there was this on-air radio personality in the morning that I would wake up to as before I stumbled off to class. And one spring, he had this whole spiel about growing seeds, and he had this tomato contest where you could, okay, start your tomato seeds, and we'll discuss them each day. And I wasn't part of the discussion, but I got myself a tomato seed. I put it in a Campbell soup can on the kitchen window, and I think that's kind of when I got interested again. I don't know whether the radio personality was all that persuasive, but I got enamored with watching this little thing grow. I killed it eventually because I did a whole bunch of things wrong. But I did grow a tomato for a while in college.
So, wow, this is a full circle experience here. So today you're a radio announcer. And are you here now telling the listener to plant a tomato?
Oh, I am. I'm telling you to plant lots of things. You'd be surprised what plants will teach you. You'll be surprised what a garden can teach you. There's all kinds of suggestions to find your center and ground yourself, and I can't think of anything better than to ground yourself in a garden.
Okay, so let's talk about starting a garden real quick here.
All right. Tips on starting a garden.
I'm a person, I have some land in my backyard. I'm living in town, and I want to start thinking about building a garden for this spring. Tell me, what's the first thing I need to do when I go out in the backyard and look at the land? What am I looking for to figure out where to put the garden?
Well, you learn to think like a plant. If there's a garden space already there, someone else has kind of made a decision. One thing that you're going to have to look at is where the sun is. That's probably the most important thing. Good garden, good plants need about at least 8 hours of sun a day. And that's one thing you really can't do too much about. There's other things that you need to think about, like the soil, the water, drainage, what kind of compost you're going to use. Those things you can ameliorate. You can help those things. The site and how much sun you get, that's kind of a given. So go for that.
So are there different types of plants who can take less than 8 hours of sun?
There are, but don't try to push it too much. There are a lot of ornamentals that do okay in the shade, and also some herbs do okay in the shade. I found, surprisingly, I've had luck with a watermelon growing in a really strange, shady place off the top of a compost heap, and I've learned that of all the viney sort of things, watermelons of all things don't need full sun. Everything will grow if you don't give them full sun, but depending on how much fruit or how much vegetable you want, how much produce you want to give the plants the best they can get.
And what is better, morning sun or afternoon sun, evening sun?
Ideally, I would say morning sun. But again, every site's going to be different. You work with what you have. Here's another tip is that if you don't have a perfect place or a small space, consider sharing a garden with somebody else. Talk to your neighbor. Do they have a bed you could use? There's community gardens. There's other spaces you can garden. And also putting things in containers. Here's another tip. If you've never done a garden before, start small. Think very small. A 3x3 or a 6x6 space or six containers on your patio that you can, unlike a garden, which the containers you can push them around and follow the sun. Starting small, you'll learn a lot and you can grow from there.
Okay, so I'm starting small and I found a spot where I can get 8 hours of sun.
Mm-hmm.
So the next question I'm going to ask right away is, what should I grow?
Oh, what should you grow? I'm always inundated by seed catalogs in the winter. And that's actually a very pleasant thing to do. I'd start out with growing something that you really like. Everybody talks about tomatoes. Perhaps you don't like tomatoes. Only grow what you like. If you like eggplant, grow that. If you like lettuce, grow that. If you're big on parsley, do that. If you don't like marjoram, do not grow it. It's just because you have an idea of a garden. Your garden is your very own. You grow what you like.
Okay, so that's a great guideline. Grow what you want to eat.
Yes, definitely.
What other considerations? What about soil?
The soil, your space for the sun may be full of sod right now. So this year you may not have a good luck with keeping the grass out of it because you'll have to turn that over, get that sod out of there, work it up. Plants need soil to stand up in. They also need nutrients that are in the soil. And they also need air in that soil. So think about fluffing things up.
What does that mean, fluffing things up?
Turn the soil over and make sure that air can get in there. You may want to add things to the soil to make it more compatible with root growth, such as compost and other soil amendments that you can get. It's pretty easy to find bags of compost, bags of topsoil that you can add to things, especially if your site is rather compacted. You can tell if, think like a tomato. If you look at that soil and it looks like it's been stood on for a long, long time and it's really compacted, you may not want to put your tomato seedling right in that. You want to fluff it up a little bit. You can add, there's a lot of things that you can purchase, or you can create your own compost pile and add that every year. Think of gardening not as a 10-minute or even a 10-day sort of thing. Gardening is a long-term event. You don't have to do everything at once. Think of years and years or months and months. You can add things slowly and improve things slowly.
So when you say it's easy to find bags of compost, what do you mean? Do you mean to buy them in stores or get them from friends, or where do you find bags of compost?
Probably if you're starting out, the best way to do things is to go to a garden store and get bags of compost or bags of topsoil. Usually those bags are weed-free, which is an important thing. I doubt if you're going to get somebody to give you bags of or bunches of compost, because most gardeners are pretty protective of what they've made. However, finding well-rotted manure from a farmer is a good idea. Be careful. Make sure that compost is not manure. Manure is new stuff. It's too strong. Compost is degraded. It's all the volatile things are out of it, but the best other things, the organics, are left. One thing about buying things in bags, look to see exactly what is in the bags that you're buying. I ran across an article by a writer named Jill Richardson who writes about food systems and eating local, and she suggests that before you buy bags, you must realize that some of the bags of compost and garden soil that you can get may contain something called Class A biosolids, which is actually sludge. The sewage treatment folks have been trying to get rid of that stuff for a long time, and the EPA unfortunately decided, because they were lobbied pretty hard, to okay the fact that you could add these biosolids and dried out things to your garden amendments. So be kind of careful there. They do regulate some things. Out of the thousands of toxic chemicals that are found in the sludge, they do strictly regulate exactly 10 heavy metals and 2 pathogens. But there's a whole lot of other stuff in there. So if your bag says Class A biosolids, buy a different bag.
Do you recommend somebody beginning a compost pile when they're starting a garden?
Yes. Again, gardening is a cycle. So things that you can add to a compost pile are clippings from your lawn, anything from your kitchen. You may not want to put in meat wastes because that may kind of encourage raccoons and other critters to come in. But there's a lot of ways to make a compost pile.
That's practically a show unto itself. But without getting too deeply into soil, can you just clarify real quickly the nitrogen, carbon explanation?
Oh, good heavens, that's a hard one. Let's see. Plants need a lot of different things to work. And surprisingly, we've forgotten that the soil is a living thing. It's not just a structure to hold up the plants. Nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, all that stuff is in there. But what's in there, what it's doing is helping to feed all the microbes that are actually the basis for life on Earth. It's all those microbes and animals, little tiny, tiny microscopic animals that are actually working with and around the plants to build the soil and to make sure that the plants get the nitrogen, get the food that they need.
And the nitrogen is from manure,
yes,
food scraps,
yes,
the so-called green things.
Not all green things, but most green things, yes.
Right. And then the carbon comes from dried leaves, straw, things like that, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And even I heat with wood. I've got a lot of extra wood ashes. I put that on my garden, too, and I mix that into my compost heap. Keeping things, it's like a recipe. You don't want to put a lot of one thing in all at once.
One of the things that I discovered last year that was kind of cool was that down by the cemetery on 13th Street, there's a resource sharing facility there where people bring cut leaves and sawdust and various resources for the garden that you can go and just take.
That's a wonderful resource. That's a wonderful way for communities to help each other garden.
So if you're throwing compost from your kitchen scraps into a pile, mm-hmm, you can get leaf scraps to throw in there to add the carbon part of it.
Good idea.
Okay, anything else we need to talk about starting a garden?
Well, one quick thing about starting a garden. Keep your garden as close to your house as possible, at least when you're starting out. The best thing I ever learned from a very wise man who told me, put your kitchen garden, the stuff that you're going to use a lot, close enough that you can go out there in your pajamas and your carpet slippers with a cup of coffee so you can pick the parsley, chives, and whatever to go with your morning eggs. Keep things close. A nice place is between your house and your garage, so you visit things every day.
So the garden is within the zone of really your house still,
right,
of your kitchen. And that brings up another question, too. Part of having a garden is the pleasure of sitting in the garden.
Oh,
so
yes.
A bench or artwork?
Oh, yes, yes. Always have a place where you can set your coffee cup down and enjoy things. Yes, a well-placed chair, yes.
Now, does the garden need to be near a source of water, like a watering hose, or can you rely on the weather?
Unfortunately, I don't rely on the weather anymore. But again, because we have hoses, there's drip irrigation, that's something, your garden doesn't have to be right next to the faucet. It does need to be hose handy. Make things handy for yourself. Keep things close, small, and be able to deal with it. One thing about gardens is we are often visited by deer.
Oh,
by
the
rabbits.
Fence.
Tell us your fence experience.
Well, for me, starting a garden in Ames was only possible when the fence was built. Our property is on the edge of the green belt that exists west, you know, the western part of town that starts with Emma McCarthy Lee Park and goes all the way back to North Dakota. And there are a lot of animals living there. And the first year I tried to do a garden, it was just kind of an exercise in futility because it just became a really wonderful snack place for...
You went out there and wondered why the plants were getting shorter?
Yeah. Yeah, and what was happening to the corn, you know. But actually, one day, Patch Larva set up a pet-friendly or an animal-friendly trap with father to see what was eating everything. And this is one of these traps where when the animal goes in, the door closes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So we went out there a few hours later, and there were three raccoons in there. I don't even know how three raccoons managed to get in there.
You are lucky to get three at once. Good for you.
So, yeah, and it wasn't just the raccoons. There was the woodchuck. There was the rabbits, the deer. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that until we built a fence, it was just impossible to have a garden. So that's kind of a fact of life in town.
It's definitely a fact of life in town. Everything is a little denser in town, and animals are hungry, and you are providing them a wonderful thing to eat. So, of course, they're going to show up. I believe always there's more rabbits in town than I ever have out on the farm. I live on Onion Creek Farm with my husband, and we also deal with pest problems, and as opposed to just a rabbit fence, we've put up a deer fence around everything, and deer can jump about 9 or 10 feet high. So it's a high fence, and we don't necessarily keep everything out, but it sure slows them down a lot. Another thing we have in the country, and I suppose you see them in the city every now and then, is woodchucks, which raccoons are omnivores. They'll help themselves to a little bit of everything. Woodchucks will go down a row of just about anything and just make a fine meal. But we must realize we are all in this together.
And then the fence you talked about going up for the mm-hmm. deer, our fence also had chicken wire starting about a foot and a half off the ground and went below the fence into the ground mm-hmm. and curved in a way that a rabbit could not dig under the fence, mm-hmm. and that was important. And to be honest, raccoons climb. They would have basically seen the fence as a ladder, and so we put an electric wire around the middle of the fence mm-hmm. to deal with the raccoons. So mm-hmm. kind of sounds a little bit like a high-security operation, and in a way it kind of is, but... Actually, the fence posts were made out of natural logs, and so it actually looks quite beautiful and visually creates a sense of space. Mm-hmm. So it's really not an eyesore, and it did finally create a space where the garden's possible.
Right. Often when I think of pests in gardens, I often remember Beatrice Potter and Mr. McGregor's garden. Peter Rabbit had to go under a gate to make them work for it a little bit.
One last question. Is it true or false that marigolds actually do keep bugs away? Is it a good idea to plant marigolds?
I always plant them. Yes, companion planting like that is a good idea. I think it helps, but so much else is going on. I always put marigolds just here and there. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We're going to have a little tune to celebrate our furry friends that like to eat gardens just as much as we do. This is a song called Little Rabbit, and you're listening to banjo player Merle Hall and guitar player Rick Exner. This is Little Rabbit.
This is, you're listening to Lana Donna Kitchen on KHOI Community Radio. And my name is Ursula Rudenberg. I'm playing backup today to the real star of the show, Lana Nachtigall, who is with me, and Donna, who is currently on the other part of the world in New Zealand, I think, will be back soon. And in the meantime, Lana and I are talking about gardening and getting ready to think about and plan a garden for this spring. And we went through some of the basics of thinking about a garden, but obviously there's a whole lot more detail that needs to really be figured out for somebody who's serious about this. So, Lana, do you have a book that you could recommend somebody who wanted to do some research?
There are a whole lot of resources on how to start a garden and gardening in general and all the specifics that you might want to ask thanks to the World Wide Web. But one of my favorite books, and probably the one that's the most used in my house because it's falling apart, it's very water-stained, and some of the pages are actually coming out. It's called How to Grow More Vegetables Than You Ever Thought Possible on Less Land than you can imagine by John Jeavons. That's Jeavons, J-E-A-V-O-N-S. It has a really good step-by-step, and one nice thing, it's got very good pictures. It actually discusses the French biointensive method of double digging and all that sort of stuff. You don't have to go quite to that length if you don't want to, but it really has a good handle on how to grow a lot of stuff in your backyard. It's got great charts. It's got companion planting lists. It's got temperatures and seed requirements, all sorts of good advice.
So you can put the name of that book on the website,
yes,
as well.
Grow More Vegetables by John Jeavons.
Okay, so Donna, Lana, I keep calling you Donna. Lana, let's talk about starting your own seeds. Tell us what we need to do to start growing our own seeds.
Okay. A garden, most people think of gardening by planting seeds outside, and that works. Everything will grow out there. But one thing about starting your own seeds is that you can get a jump on the season. This season has been a cold, wet spring so far, so naturally we can't grow anything outside. But if you have a warm space inside your house, you can get a jump on some seeds. And some things like tomatoes and peppers, eggplants, they are things that can use all of the time and heat and light that you can give them. That's why normally, or when you're thinking of a garden, you can actually buy a lot of these things already grown at a gardening place. You can go in and get seedlings that are already grown, the tomatoes, the peppers, the eggplants, cabbages and kales. A really good thing about starting seeds is that you can start dreaming about the garden long about December when the seed catalogs start to arrive. Read a lot then. Plan a lot then. But even if you just start one or two varieties of seeds for your garden, it will teach you a lot. Maybe they won't make it and they die and you have to go to a garden supply anyway. But give this a try if you've never done it before.
Yeah, any seed catalogs you would recommend?
Oh, I've got some favorite seed catalogs. surprising, a lot of seed catalogs that I use come from Maine. Heaven knows why that's a great place to get seeds from. But there's a lot of organic seed catalog houses out of that space. One that I...
That's a beer truck in the alley.
It's a beer truck in the alley. Three cheers for beer trucks. All right. My favorite seed catalogs are Johnny's Select Seeds, Pine Tree Garden Seeds. Pine Tree Garden Seeds is a great place for odd herb seeds and small quantities of seeds for backyard gardeners. Johnny Selected Seeds, I get huge quantities of things from. Fedco is actually another good catalog to get. Not only do they have a whole lot of organic seeds sourced out, but they, in between all the little spaces in the catalog, are poems, political commentary, little asides. It's a great catalog to read. And there's a place called Sand Hill Preservation Center right here in Calamus, Iowa. Sand Hill Preservation is actually run by a PFI member. His name is Glenn Drowns.
And PFI is?
Practical Farmers of Iowa. So I've actually met him. He has quite a collection of wonderful stuff. And I find I like to try things that are sourced out of Iowa. The seeds grow well that are close to home. And there's also Seed Savers Exchange out of Decorah, Iowa, for some really fun varieties and also a beautiful catalog. So that's some of my favorite seed catalogs.
Can you put a list of these on the website?
I can put a list of these on the website, and they all have websites you can go to. Okay. Starting seeds inside. One thing you have to remember about starting seeds inside is that seeds need requirements just as if they are growing outside. What you're trying to do is encourage the warmth of summer to trick them into growing early. And here's a thought. It's really hard to play God. You realize how much goes into getting things to germinate. There's heat and light and space and basically care. One reason to start your own seeds is that you can get earlier seedlings. You can get stronger seedlings because they're not traveling around in a truck and sitting around in a garden center for a while. You can get all sorts of varieties. These seed catalogs, you can find a variety that really trips your trigger. Try something brand new. There's more than just five or six kinds of tomatoes or five or six kinds of peppers. Think like a cook. What do you want to taste? Also, reading the varieties just kind of makes you feel good all over. I really enjoy doing it. Also, the cost of growing things from seed, especially if you save seeds and share seeds with one another, you can grow tomatoes for not a whole lot.
So you can plant tomatoes one summer and then harvest the seeds and they will grow tomato plants?
That's a nice question. If you have a open pollinated or a heirloom variety of tomatoes, that means that yes, the seeds will generally come true. There's all kinds of pollination, interbreeding, all kinds of stuff happening in your garden. But traditionally and usually, the heirloom seeds that you plant and the open pollinated seeds that you plant will grow back a very similar, very, very similar tomato. And I've been growing back some varieties in my garden for a long time, and I can't say they're 100% pure, but if you have a good tomato, you keep it and give it a try for another time. You can start tomato seeds for planting mid-May, long about now, first part, end part of March. They need about 6 weeks of growing inside. They need a temperature of about 70 degrees to grow well.
Does it need to be in a sunny spot in your house?
It does not need, seeds don't need sun until they emerge. Now you have to read seed packets because some seeds do need light to grow. Tomatoes, I found, don't need light to grow. However, I have a light and heating bed set up for them, but they don't necessarily need light to germinate. They do need light to grow. As soon as their little shoulders push out of the soil, they're going to be reaching for light, and the more light you can give them, the better. A south-facing window is just fine, but make sure that the temperature does not vary too much up and down. And it's tricky this time of year in the spring.
You said a light and heating bed. Can you talk a little bit about what kind of a container to plant your seed in?
You can plant your seeds in just about anything. I use a 72-cell seedling tray, but a yogurt cup or anything that you want to grow in is just fine. The most important thing is drainage, drainage, drainage. If you use a yogurt cup or any other kind of little plastic container, poke all kinds of holes in the bottom and put that in a tray. You don't want the seedlings to be setting in a soggy, soggy, compacted soil.
So you mentioned a seedling tray. Is that one of these kind of black plastic things you see in the,
Yes. That's just how I grow things, because I tend to overdo and I do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things at a time. You don't have to go to that big.
And can you buy seedling trays like that?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. In any garden center, we'll have them. Mm-hmm. They're just fine. You can buy them by the piece. What you'll find is the inside piece that has all little cups in it and a tray on the outside to hold water. You can get trays without holes that holds water. I prefer the trays that do have holes, because I don't want to overwater things.
And then what kind of soil should you put in those trays?
In that soil, I buy, and I would suggest buying or finding, a seed-starting medium, again, at a garden center. That is generally a mix of sphagnum moss, vermiculite, perlite, some commercial compost soil, some garden soil and sand, combination of such. For the growing medium itself, it does not need a lot of fertilizer. All the life in the seed to get it going is in the seed. It's like a chicken egg. There's already a chicken in there if it's fertile. And the seed has enough oomph if it gets heat and light that it will sprout by itself. Each seed has its own timing. Usually a seed packet or a garden catalog will tell you if it's 10 days to immersion, 10 days to sprouting, or 20 days to sprouting. And also it may give you hints as to how deep you plant the seed. The seed may be, a good way to think about it is plant the seed as deep as the seed is wide, at its widest point. So most seeds don't have to be planted very deep at all.
So a tomato seed is really a very small
seed.
You just put it near the surface?
Put it in the surface, but do cover. And I put it in the soil. Here's another hint. I make sure my soil is good and damp, not soggy, but damp before I start, so I'm not watering it later and having it all settle down and get too tight. I make sure the soil is damp before I put it in my little pot. Put the seed in, cover it with more soil, and then just tap it lightly with my fingers to push things down just a tiny bit. They're gentle little things, but they do need to be covered and they do need to be damp.
And then do you water it after you've planted it, or you don't?
I don't, generally. Mm-hmm. I usually, for the first couple of days, I cover that flat or cover that pot with some wax paper. Just keep it a little damp that way. And then after 3-4 days, I can water it. Mm-hmm. With just a watering can. My seed growing bed setup is, and this is probably way too much trouble for a home use, but you can scale this down. There are heating mats available to keep yours underneath your seedling pots to keep things warm. And again, between 60 and 80 degrees is a good start. You don't want to cook them. You don't want to let them get too cold. My setup is I have two big 50-gallon drums. I have a radiant heater, room heater, sitting underneath that. On top of the drums, I've got a 8-foot-long piece of plywood covered with a couple sheets of plastic. On top of that, I put my growing seeds or my seed flats. And on top of that, I've got 4 shop lights. And you can research shop lights and research growing lights. I don't use any fancy grow lights. My shop lights have got one bulb is a cool light bulb. The other one is a is a warm light bulb. I think that's just because that's what I happen to have. But those are on, and I keep those on all the time just to help with the heat, and then cover the whole thing with a piece of plastic.
So now you are somebody who's raising seedlings to actually sell
right.
at the farmer's market. And
right. So you can you can scale that back quite a bit.
So if you were, if I was, or I am, a person who wants to grow some seeds for my garden, I can take these containers and just keep them in a room that's 70 degrees or something.
Keep them
like
in
that.
A room 70 degrees. A covering like with either a bit of plastic or some sort of dome cover or wax paper will help, because in a room you're going to have a drying situation. Be careful. Again, you get to play God. Watch over your little garden as you grow it.
So the wax paper and the plastic is a way of keeping the moisture in.
Keeping the moisture in, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then your seed should start to pop up. And when they pop up,
they need to have sun.
Then they need sun. Move closer to the window. Be careful. You might need to move things away at night if it gets really below zero outside or very cold. So again, you're watching the environment.
Any particular plants that you recommend for this?
Tomatoes are a great thing to start because they germinate very well. I find tomatoes peppers are fine too. Also, a really fine thing to grow is anything in the cabbage family. Those things really benefit from a good start in a greenhouse, and you can put on a plant. Other things like carrots, lettuce, radishes, they actually grow better just from the ground. They don't transplant very well.
What about peppers?
Peppers are related to tomatoes. Yes, they're just fine. You can start those as a seedling.
And what about onions?
I have started onions, and I always start leeks as plants. But unless you're very dedicated, I love gardening, so I do this. I start leeks and shallots and some onions. They take a long, long time to germinate. I generally buy onion plants from a commercial grower. I wouldn't suggest, unless you really want to fuss over them, because they really need to be started long about the end of January. They need a long, long time. They're fine. They do well. But research onions on the web. You'll see. They take a long time, but they're fine.
Okay. Anything else about growing seeds?
Oh, here's a hint. A lot of people like parsley. Parsley is a wonderful thing to grow in your garden. Parsley is a real dickens of a plant to get to germinate. Parsley has a tiny little seed. You can plant them outside, and they'll grow. But be careful, because they take forever. They take about 20 days for them to show up. It just takes that long. And I have a hint for parsley. For parsley seeds, soak them. Soak the parsley seeds for a day. Rinse the parsley seeds in a very fine sieve to get rid of the water that you soaked them in. Let them dry on a plate on your kitchen counter, and then plant the seeds. What you're doing, I had to write this down because I can never remember how to say this. Parsley seeds are covered naturally with something called furanocuranarins. What that is, I consider that the icky stuff. What that is, it's a deterrent to germination. It slows everything down. I suppose for the plant, that's wonderful, but it really makes it very hard for the plant to start. So if you get rid of that by soaking those seeds for a while, you have much better luck with your parsley. Whether you plant them inside in a pot and put them out later as a seedling, or if you put them in your garden, soak them first. It really helps a lot.
Is cilantro a relative of parsley? Would this account for cilantro as well? Because they look the same.
The tops look same. They are the same, and I have soaked cilantro seeds too. That works. Those little hard seeds, they take forever in a day, but they will come. They will come. Cilantro also needs a lot more heat than parsley does, so be patient. Be patient. They work. They work. I have another book to recommend for, and if you're interested in seed starting, it's called The New Seed Starter's Handbook by Nancy Bubel, who, another book that is very thumbed and very well used, The New Seed Starter's Handbook.
Okay, thank you, and we'll put that on the website as well.
Good.
So, Lana, let's recap.
All right. Well, I suggest everyone enjoy spring because I know it is coming. I know it's coming. Two reasons. The birds are actually making their spring bird sounds. They're just not standing outside looking cold. Number two, my chicken flock is laying again, and I'm getting a lot of green eggs. Go Arikana chickens. And, oh, number three, plant a garden. Think about spring. It's a wonderful thing to do, whether you just start something in your backyard or start something on your windowsill. And get yourself grounded. Get yourself into gardening. It's a very good thing.
And again, we have a number of resources that you'll make available on the website. You have a book on gardening that you think is very, very helpful on planting seeds as well. Mm-hmm. And then a number of catalogs and some checklist thoughts for how to grow seeds in your house.
Yeah, just my thoughts. And also, for your sweet tooth, there'll be the Linzertort recipe.
The Linzertort recipe.
Oh, yes. Why not? Yes. So think spring. Think warm thoughts. Let's go out with another tune. This is a tune by my fiddler friend, Alice McGarry. And this is called 5 Miles Out of Town and Dry and Dusty.
And thank you for listening. This has been Lana Donna Kitchen. And this is with Lana Nachtigall and myself, Ursula Rudenberg, standing in for Donna, who will be back soon.
We sure hope so.
And we appreciate your listening, and happy spring.